This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Bridget Lindquist. She's Executive Director of the Española Valley Humane Society, and Jane Bernard, who is a photographer who also works with the Humane Society. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. It's always great to have you back. I don't know why we always start laughing.
I don't either.
I just love your energy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So you have done amazing things in Española for the animal populations there. And one of the things that you've done is an incredible outreach program. How does that work?
Well, we started Free Spay Neuter about 4 years ago, and one of the things we thought is we needed to communicate that locally. We suspected that just putting it on a billboard or telling each other about it was not sufficient. So we sent a veterinarian and a couple staff members out to go door to door. And what we discovered in the process is not only did people not know that spay neuter was free, but they also didn't know we existed. Which was somewhat painful, but it was a good learning experience for us. And it gave us an opportunity to reach our constituents and dispel some of the prejudices we had about our locals and come to realize they love animals too.
Yeah.
So we did that over the next 3 years, and intake at the shelter from the city declined in general. But because of our outreach and more people knowing about us, they used us as a resource. And so if people needed to surrender animals, they finally knew where to go instead of just dumping them in the arroyos or worse. So we, because of this intensive outreach effort and because of our single-minded focus on spay-neuter, we've reduced the number of animals coming to the shelter from the city by 40%.
And it's been is huge.
It's huge. It's been a remarkable gift. Our goal is 70, so we're not done yet. But what we're finding is that as fewer animals are coming from the city, we're now able to reach out to surrounding areas like Okawinge and Santa Clara and the village of Chimayo. And again, our focus there, similar door-to-door effort, local free shot clinics, free transport to our clinic for vaccination and for spay-neuter, returning the animals the next day, doing whatever we can to get our hands on every intact animal with a goal of getting to 70% of the animals in those communities. So it's been exhilarating to see success close to home.
Yeah.
And to have the time and energy and resource to start reaching out.
When you go door to door, what kind of things do you find?
Well, you know, we find a whole gamut from nursing moms with very, very young pups, and the resident intends to, you know, sell those pups in the Walmart parking lot.
Is that successful? I mean, do people actually make money that way?
You know, for blue pit bulls, they'll make $200-$250 a dog.
Yeah.
And when you consider how poor our population is, that is a ton of money.
Yeah.
That can be more well over a couple of weeks worth of income for a family. But we also find guys who come with the tats and the piercings, and you know, they look like they're gang members, and they talk about their dog who they've gotten neutered, and we're like, yeah, right. And sure enough, that healthy little cocker spaniel comes running out of the back bedroom with a collar, with the tag, neutered, fully vaccinated. And those are the moments that I love, because we have staff at the shelter. You tend to see the worst in the community, but it gives us a chance to see what the what a true reflection is of Española and how many avid dog and cat lovers there are.
This program that the Española Valley Humane is doing is really innovative nationwide. And what I really appreciate about the shelter is they decided that they wanted, instead of building a better facility to house more homeless animals, they wanted to address the issue of animal homelessness and reduce the number of homeless animals in the community. And I think that that is it's something that I really value and appreciate.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense.
Seems intuitive now, doesn't it?
It does, but when you've done something a certain way for a long period of time, you can tend to keep doing it that way.
Right.
And they've also received grants from PetSmart Charities and also
the ASPCA.
Yeah, for this program. And in many ways, especially this outreach program, it's a pilot project that hopefully will inspire and spread to other shelters nationwide.
Well, and to be fair, you know, the pilot is not our creation. HSUS has a program called Pets for Life.
Humane Society
of the United States.
Yeah.
And they created a program really to reach out in urban metro areas. We are somewhat novel in that more and more large epicenters are being conquered. There are fewer and fewer homeless animals there. And now national funding organizations like PetSmart is wanting to recreate this and say, well, how does it apply to rural or more agrarian communities? And boy, do we fit into that category, because these villages are very far from our clinic. And the question is, how do you reach these animals with consistency? You don't want to just show up, fix the animal, and then abandon that poor creature. You want to be a continued resource for the village. So, you know, we're looking at models that talk about televet medicine, right? Where someone could theoretically use a phone app to reach us and talk about the medical needs of their animals, and trying to be as groundbreaking as we can in a little part of the world.
A phone app? Why don't they just call you?
Well, because for the most part, they're going to want to show the festering wound, or they're going to want to show the boil, or the vet's going to need some information that requires some sort of a visual interaction.
Right,
but
right.
They do call, although it's likely many of them don't know about us.
Well, you start all over again.
Exactly.
With outreach to areas further and further from town.
Right, right. So we're talking about an advanced team that is intensely a part of that village and that community, and trying to better understand the mores of that community, what might be the most effective way for us to communicate and become a partner with them.
So you find that you use different ways of communicating in different areas with different people, depending on their mores. Like, what's an example of that? What do you mean?
Well, for some community members, alfalfa is king. So, and that's not true for everyone. Some places, paying $10 for a breeding pit bull is what might reach those community participants. Other places, if you show up with a load of alfalfa that they can commingle with hay for their horses, that will get them, that will entice them to bring animals to us, or to, you know, or create begin to create a relationship that might ultimately lead to a trusting one.
Very interesting.
And what they're doing, what you're also doing, is going out into the communities and doing free vaccination clinics. So people don't have to travel to the shelter, but in Chimayo, they could go to the community center and get their animal vaccinated as well as wormed, correct?
Right.
And learn about the services at the shelter and have an initial contact that's within their own community, as opposed to them having to put the animal in their car and driving to the clinic. So that initiates the conversation about spay-neuter, and then people can also sign their animals up for free spay-neuter at that event. And maybe the first time they hear it, they don't sign their animal up, but hopefully after continued exposure and their neighbors bringing their animals in to be spay-neutered, the idea is that it will eventually change people's perceptions of what spay-neuter is.
Right.
What are the objections that you come across to spay-neuter when you're out in the community?
Well, some people have concern over surgery, as would I. And the question is my dog going to be safe? And, you know, even uttering the words out loud, spay or neuter, you know, most folks who have been blessed with a lot of education don't know, is that a guy or a girl? So just the vernacular is hard. I want my dog fixed. I understand he or she's going to have to be sedated. You know, are they going to come out of it? Could they die? So there's some rational, very rational fears. And then, of course, you get a very typical reaction, mostly from men, around the idea of altering a male dog.
Right.
And immediately they go there and think that it's going to generalize, you know, it's going to be generalized to their manhood. And so you kind of have to, we've found that in those cases, the conversation's best done with his wife.
Yeah.
Oddly enough. But, Usually it has to do with the safety of the animal or the fact that they don't want to emasculate their animal. Sometimes we get objections because they want their guard dog to be threatening and stay at home, you know, to really continue to secure the perimeter. And one of the responses we have is, well, you know, if we fix him, he won't be chasing the ladies, which is something you have to deal with every day as he, you know, runs around going after all the females in heat.
Also, there's a misperception, I think, in the community. I've encountered this, that if you spay or neuter your dog, they're more likely to get cancer.
Yeah.
What?
Isn't that interesting?
I've never heard that.
Yeah. And it's just, it's one of those myths.
It's a myth. Interesting.
And I'm curious where that comes from. And we haven't been able to figure that out, but that's part of our challenge is to come from enough of a place of humility and seeking understanding instead of pretending to educate, right? You know, tell me a little bit more. Where'd that come from? I haven't encountered someone with that, but I would love to have a conversation.
They don't really know.
What makes you think that? Do you think that about procedures related to your relatives? You know, have you had a relative who's had a procedure and then subsequently contracted cancer? But what I can be assured of is if one person has that misperception, most people in the community do.
Well, and probably there has been a neutered dog who got cancer.
Well, then there's that. That's
and
true.
And people love to assign, and we all do it. I mean, it is a human thing to assign cause and effect without necessarily really testing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or having a way to test it.
Yeah.
Very interesting. We're talking to Bridget Lindquist and Jane Bernard, Espanola Valley Humane Society, which is really an amazing institution, and you've been building it for how long?
This is my 10th year of service.
Oh my goodness, congratulations.
Thank you. Time flies.
Indeed it does.
I think part of the transformation relative to spay neuter had to do with a certain impatience that I developed about year 5 when it was shortly after the recession, and more animals were coming to us because, of course, people were not able to afford their care. And I realized, boy, we could be doing this for the rest of our lives,
Receiving
4,000, 4,500 animals every year. We need to try something different. We were saving everyone we could. We had excellent adoption and transfer, and you know, we were working with rescues. We were collaborating the way we were supposed to, but we were just not able to save everyone, and it felt daunting. And I think at that point, anticipating I'd one day retire, and wanted to leave a legacy that was something other than a larger shelter in such a poor community, we said, forget placements. Let's just focus on spay neuter, and let's see if we can't chip away at the mountain.
And you've done so.
We intake this year will be around 2,400 animals versus almost twice that much 5 years ago. So it's been wonderful. But keep in mind, most of these outlying communities that we're now addressing, they're not going to bring animals in need to the shelter.
Yeah.
For the entire county of Rio Riba, which we serve, there's one animal control officer. One. So he's spending most of his time rounding up animals close to where they office.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to be disparaging, but that's not fair. That's not fair. Sippy's overwhelmed. And yeah, they need more. Either they need to be proactive in reaching out to animals in need, or the communities need to be, and we're choosing to pursue the latter.
And Colorado is that example, that crazy example of having done such a good job with spay neuter that they're importing puppies, which I think is amazing and hilarious.
Yeah.
And of course, we have in the state of New Mexico puppies to export to Colorado, but it shows that it's possible.
It does. And actually, Colorado's more recently becoming an example of a state that's going to have to start closing its borders to those exported puppies, because they have reached a balance relative to pets and how many, not as many people are moving there. And the ones that are there have enough pets in their household. So we're lucky enough to have transfer partners that are sort of honoring our relationship by continuing transfers. But the number of animals going flowing to Colorado has dropped dramatically.
Amazing. Closing their borders to transported puppies, unless they have a passport and a visa.
Well, what they're finding in the Denver area is they need to help communities on the other side of the mountain. or to the south, there are actually communities that now have an abundance of puppies and cats. So they're helping other organizations within the state.
You have other programs at the shelter as well. I was looking at your website, and one of them that I really enjoyed was the Barn Cat program.
Oh, yeah. So one of our challenges, and it continues to be, are cats in the valley, because cats are not historically perceived to be pets. They sort of free roam whether or not someone cares for them. And we had been receiving a lot of cats claimed to be feral, which means wild and you can't touch them, and learned that while in our care, they were pretty social, but not quite social enough to become someone's pet. So we, 3 years ago, had to euthanize cats that were wild or semi-social, because we didn't have an outcome for them. We didn't have a place. We didn't have families who were crying out for them. And we had plenty of perfectly adoptable cats. We started the Barn Cat program as a way of rehoming these temperamental cats. And it kind of makes sense in a state where rodents are a huge problem. But yeah, as folks bring in feral cats or nuisance outdoor cats who are would not be good candidates as pets, we rehome those animals in barns. And we make sure that there's a guardian there who, of course, can feed, you know, and water and keep an eye out on the cats. And we understand that the life expectancy of a barn cat is going to be different from a cat that's privileged enough to live in a home. But at the end of the day, that is a better outcome than euthanizing that poor animal. And that animal came from an area where he or she subsisted beautifully in the wild. So because of that, the euthanasia of cats has dropped by half. Absolutely. It's been remarkable. And we're placing now 83% of our animals, many of whom are cats, because of that program. Very proud of our ability to do that.
I'll tell you, I was actually thinking about sending all my dogs to a babysitter for a couple of weeks and getting a cat, because I had a mouse problem.
Did you?
Yeah. And actually the terrier did eat about 5 mice.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Fabulous. Well, then you don't need a barn cat.
No, but a cat probably would have eaten them all. We had to do some some mouse trapping with those live traps. And then, of course, where do you put those mice that you catch live?
Rehome mice.
Rehoming pantry mice is a topic for a different program. Another thing that you do at the Espanola Valley Humane Society is, of course, what every shelter does, is take in lost animals and try to find their owners.
Yeah. We probably have a lower percentage than most shelters in this state, because it hovers around 4 to 5% end up being returned to their owners. And one of the disheartening aspects of what we do, it's really disheartening when you get this beautiful, generally it's a pit mix, into the shelter who's been lost, and it's an older animal who, you know, has lost its luster and is clearly reacting to its owner coming through the door, and the owner is denying that this animal's with them.
What?
It kills me. And because they're looking for a newer, younger, you know, something else, and didn't realize that their pet was still at the shelter. So that happens. And
that's horrible.
I'm shocked.
This is horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. However,
That's like sending your elderly grandma up the river.
Right. Well, and what I think of in moments like that is, we do not want a dog to be with that person, right? So as horrible as that discovery it is, it gives us a chance to learn more about that household and to do what we need to make sure they don't get a pet. And with that dog, you start to question the quality of its life in that person's care, and gives us an opportunity to rehome that dog, which we do in the vast majority of cases. So it's a very, very sad moment. But I wish there were more people who wanted their pets back. I wish there were more people in the valley who are able to search for lost pets and don't just assume they've been eaten. We don't enjoy that.
And ladies and gentlemen, if your dog or cat goes out and you think it's been eaten by a coyote or killed by an owl or something like that, there's a good chance, and I learned this from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter too, that it's actually in the shelter.
Right. right? First place you should look. First place you should look, even before you hang the posters, or maybe simultaneous. And I've benefited from that myself. I've had dogs that have gotten out and ended up at Santa Fe Humane, and lo and behold, there they were on the website peering out at me. So it's, you know, I long for the day when we have more people looking for their pets at the shelter. I think that's probably a predicament Santa Fe faces too. I'm sure their rehome rate is much higher than ours. But at this point, what we're trying to do in the Valley is make animals scarce. It's not 10 years ago, if you lost your pet, there were about 20 adolescents running by your mailbox that the next morning when you went out to get your paper. Today, that's not the case.
Yeah.
And with fewer animals, we're noticing that there's value now around animals that probably didn't exist 10 years ago. And that's an important contribution.
Which perhaps signals a shift in society. I mean, I think that, I don't know if this is true, but it seems to me that as we pay more attention to the natural world and the importance of wildlife and the importance of our own animals, it's all sort of a piece.
Yeah. I would love to think that I think the Valley, which gets relegated, is actually part of a larger picture, national or world perspective picture. I've learned to absolutely love the community we serve and really appreciate a lot of what makes it so special. I thought of that, Jane, when you were talking about the shot clinics in Chimayo, and word gets out so fast because people are all related or people are all gathering for dinner. You know, these communities, as disenfranchised as they might feel, have a strong sense of family. They're not putting grandma in the nursing home. They're caring for her through the end of her life. And I think trying to value and honor that while at the same time addressing some strong tendencies toward inhumane behavior is the challenge. And that's what makes it exciting to serve where we do.
So we're talking about the Espanola Valley Humane Society. And one of the things that is coming up is on Saturday, the 30th of April, there's an event which has been done before that I've actually attended. It's a wonderful thing. It's called Bad Dogs for a Good Cause. What's it about?
It's about bringing your dog in to be photographed.
Now, what if it's a good dog?
If we like good dogs. You can bring good dogs. And the postcard says good dogs are wanted.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So you bring your dog in, and for a $100 donation, you get a little mini portrait session as well as an 8x10 print of your dog. And 100% of that $100 goes to the Espanola Valley Humane Society. Last time we did this, we raised about $3,500 for the shelter.
Yep.
And it's a great opportunity to come down, meet other dogs, other good dogs, and also have an opportunity to meet and talk with Bridget and learn more about what the Espanola Valley Humane does, to show off your dog, to get a great portrait of your animal. And it's a really fun event.
And there's something about having a professional portrait of your animal. I mean, Lord knows we all take... I was looking at my Facebook, and it's like every picture on my Facebook is my dog's. But I can't take as good a picture as you can, as a professional photographer can. And there's something really special about having that.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that, you know, I hear again and again from people whose dogs I have photographed how much they treasure those images, especially because our dogs aren't with us forever.
That's right.
Even though we wish they could be.
They're continually teaching us mortality, which is sort of irritating and yet profound and beautiful at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, once again, Saturday, April 30th. It's at Bad Dog Design, which is at 901 West San Mateo in Santa Fe. But you can't just show up. You actually have to reserve. And there's definitely spaces left right now, but it does fill up.
It does. It usually sells out. And if you're interested in bringing your dog or dogs down to be photographed, you can either look on the Espanola Valley Humane Facebook page. There's information about the event. And be sure to like us when you visit. Or you can email me, the letter J at janebernard.com.
J at janebernard.com. Jane Bernard and Bridget Lindquist. Bridget is Executive Director of the Espanola Valley Humane Society. They are on the web at evalleyshelter.org.
That's right.
And I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.